Hello, folks. It's your old pal and regular host, Kalen Egan, here, telling you that you are not going to get a regular old episode today. No! Travis and I couldn't get our shit together. Or, if I'm going to be honest, which I told Travis I wouldn't be, but it's midnight and all bets are off. We didn't get it together because Travis had to fly to New York for 3 days of fish. You heard me correctly. 3 days of fish. And we are certainly going to talk about that when he gets back and we record the back half of Beverly Hills Cop. In the meantime, because this is the first week we've ever actually kind of missed, we have a pretty awesome treat for you instead, which is a whole new show. We made up a new show and we made up a new host. And he's our pal named Spencer Owen. You might remember him from 2 weeks ago when he was our guest for The Rock. And we'll talk about all this on the show, but that same night we thought, why stop now? After 2.5 hours of Michael Bay, you want to keep recording. You want to start a new project. So we made up a new show called Does Your Favorite Song Suck?, which will trade on Spencer's amazing and deep knowledge of music and time, which makes him just the perfect host for a show about music nostalgia. Pop nostalgia. So anyway, all this is a very rambling intro to say you're very lucky to get this today. It's the first of many. It's all still just kind of raw. Think of this like a test episode, and we'll start putting out new episodes as soon as Spencer and me and Travis can kind of put it together. For now, enjoy this. Think of it like a demo, and we'll be back for real next week with Beverly Hills Cop. Thanks. Bye.
Welcome to the first episode of Does Your Favorite Song Suck?
Oh, God damn it.
Where, I like he's doing me.
I know.
Where we revisit great songs from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck.
Yes! We're in.
This is the first episode.
Say your name.
This is my name is Spencer Owen.
My name's Travis Santel.
And I'm Kalen Egan, but this, we're just guests today.
They're guests on my show.
This is my show. It's my show.
It's my show. We're guests on your show that we made you do, which is fucking amazing. Yeah,
this is the inaugural episode, which has we've literally had just had a 5-minute discussion about how to this show would work, modeled after the way the procession of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? And it's honestly, I think, very promising.
Yeah. The breakout podcast.
Welcome to How Does Your Favorite Movie Suck was created.
Yeah, you just do
exact
it.
Same
you
amount
just
of time.
Do it.
Exact same level of intent.
What's funny is that Kalen and I are used to this. Like we started, I realized it was gathering a little bit of momentum, like a snowball, and I was like, "Well, let's just do it." And Kalen's like, "Let's just do it." And Spencer's eyes got wide, and he was like, "What? What's happening?" you just started a podcast. That's what just happened.
But you know, to peek behind the curtain here, we just finished recording another episode, the one I was a guest on, Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, where we watched The Rock. And after The Rock, I was feeling pretty tired. I think we were all feeling pretty tired. I think I heard a yawn from two or three of us. And then we were like, well, let's record this thing. And we recorded it. And after an hour and a half of talking about it or whatever, I was like, I feel like we could do something else, another movie or something. Like,
jazzed. I'll take you up on that.
Yeah.
Double down. We're going to create a whole new show.
So here's the premise of this show is that, Travis and Kalen came up with this really great list of movies from the 80s and 90s that would be excellent to sort of pull from as an arbitrary random selection for the theme of a nostalgia-based discussion. And all of those movies, like I was just saying to them, I looked at that list and I was like, you know, it's not like this is all the movies that people would have nostalgia about, but there aren't very many on it that I remember seeing that I could think like, you know, basically I looked at it and I thought, oh, this is a good list. This list is a good, it's a good
it's
pool
fair.
To draw
it's
from. It's a
list.
Totally fair list. Yeah. And you could justify each movie's inclusion.
Except for Police Academy.
Except for all the Police Academy movies.
We went a little bit haywire there. But yeah. And so to carry that forward, we thought, well, there's no way to do that with songs.
Yeah. I was like, how are we going to pick the song?
To be fair, I never thought that.
Well, I was thinking.
You didn't either, because when we were talking about it with Gio, we thought, yeah, we'll figure it out.
I was just thinking about the way I categorize songs in my mind, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to come up with a comprehensive list of 80s and 90s songs based on my interests, my knowledge base, and stuff like that, the way that you guys did with the movies of the Does Your Favorite Movie totally. Suck list. So someone, one of you guys, Travis, mentioned the top 100 songs of each year. And if we take the 80s and 90s, that makes 2,000 songs.
Yeah.
And so our bag is not going to be a bag.
Yeah.
It's going to be a random number generator between 1 and 2,000.
This comes because my sophomore and junior year roommate at Emory University, every Thursday morning would check the Billboard chart updates and post them on our dorm room door.
Cool.
Wow. I know.
So I knew that the Billboard charts existed because
to be clear, this is not what's cool. What's kind of cool about it is it's a weird selection of songs defined only by their popularity. So there's all sorts of important songs from the era that are not going to be on this list, but it's just a way of discussing the era. And I think that this show idea really only works based on what was popular then and to talk about it now.
And I think music crystallizes nostalgia and emotion in a way that movies sort of do, for sure, and some of them really do. But music is a pipeline to nostalgia, for me at least. I'm sure for you, Spencer.
Yep.
But Spencer's a musical genius guy, and so he can speak about the musicality of the film, the composition of the song, but also speak to the particular nostalgia that the song evokes, or maybe why it charted in the first place, what was good about it, is it still good?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 1984, so I'm not going to have first-person experience with the era of a lot of this stuff, but definitely in the 90s I'll have a better, sense.
But a lot of that, I mean, I'm guessing, and I haven't looked at the list, but even the early to mid-80s stuff,
oh yeah,
we know it.
It carries through the years. That's what a song is supposed to do. It comes out during an era, it makes its mark, and it helps define the era sonically in that way. And then when you listen to music that has been made before today, you sort of start to paint a portrait of what that was.
Well, and just very quickly looking, you know, we were like, let's just experiment and look at a year and look and pick a random number on that year. So we looked at 1992, and looking down that list, one of the songs that sticks out is Bohemian Rhapsody, which was obviously charting because of Wayne's World. What a fun way to start talking about what was going on in 1992 and why that song suddenly came back into the fold. I have a million things to say about that. Granted, it's a movie reason, but like, that's fucking cool. Like, it's cool to think about. And that was high as shit on that list.
It was
a big hit that year.
You could talk about the fact that Mike Myers, who I only know this because of his WTF interview with Marc Maron, said that he fought tooth and nail for that song's inclusion in the movie.
Everyone doubted. They said, you can't do this. And you certainly can't play it this fucking long, man. Wow. And he was like, yes, I can. We must.
Yeah. And that is why that song is known by millions of people today, because it wouldn't have necessarily been known by them before that.
No, it utterly revived that song from being a novelty item into being something that people actually take kind of seriously.
I want to pitch that
weirdly, because it's in a comedy in a joke scene.
Yeah,
crazy,
but memorable, and also the song fucking rules. I want to pitch just structure wise that we pick a random song, we talk about it, same structures as that. I think we just stop and listen to it.
Yeah.
And then come back and talk about it.
That seems like exactly how it should go.
Killer.
And I also want to say, just at the outset, we made this up on a whim at 11:30 on a Saturday. So there's no...
Because we're cool guys.
Let's just say there's no pressure on anybody to keep this weekly or bi-weekly. No, but I think we should, because I don't know what this show will be. Yeah. We're gonna put it out and see what happens, and Spencer is free to take it up. We should keep talking about how to keep it up.
Spencer, you let this fucking idea drop, you're dead to me. I swear to God.
This could be the inaugural and final episode.
That's what I'm saying.
We're giving you an opportunity. This is a money making idea, Spencer. Do you want the money or do you not want the money?
I mean,
we fucking banked it on our podcast.
Well, considering how much I paid you guys to be on the last episode, I can only hope you guys are paying me back that money to be on this show.
We're coming out square.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's do this.
I've got the random number generator.
So
I have
between 1 and 2,000.
Yep, I have minimum 1, maximum 2,000 in my
random. No, he's going to randomly generate.
Oh, it's
the number.
A random generator.
Yeah,
that's the word.
So based on that number, we're gonna okay. know what year
the,
and we're gonna know.
Yeah, so the number is 324. So that would be the year 1982. Because we're going 1980 to 1999, right?
Well, I already have 1980. Wait a minute. 1982 and number what?
24.
Okay.
You want to know what it is?
Yeah, I do.
Jump Around by House of Pain.
Holy shit. We nailed it.
So let's take a moment.
Yeah.
Or, well, wait a minute. No, we talk about
the song. Yeah, we do.
What you got?
I mean, mad hit.
The thing I know, this is a fun song. Of course it's a fun song. You think of that fanfare at the opening, you think of the crazy beat. Then you think of that beautiful
like that, you mean?
I don't know who produced the song, but it sounds like a DJ Muggs production, who's the guy from Cypress Hill who produced their beats, because it's got that noise.
Yeah.
And
it's 24. What's
God
his
damn
name?
It's got
Everlast, yeah. Who went on to make horrible music in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Horrible hit songs. Truly, like, in my childhood in Los Angeles, much of that my childhood in Los Angeles is colored by the song Maybe You Really Might Know What It's Like to Have the Blues by Everlast, which is a true drag, a total dirge, really unpleasant and unfortunate song.
There's so many classic standard... This is 1982, Kalen? This is wrong.
Oh.
Let me just pause this, because I've clearly realized that you're wrong.
Are we starting over, or are we going back?
Well, wait, because obviously this didn't come out in 1982.
I think we might need to go back.
I got confused.
How did we all just not register that's not an 80s song?
I totally got confused.
Leave this in the podcast.
You know, that's an excellent point.
We just got so excited.
Chalk it up to excitement and delirium, because, of course, 1982 did not feature Everlast rapping.
Who went on a decade later to do terrible music? 17 years later, he was
listening to this. We're just screaming and saying, like, what?
Also, they're like,
horrible.
Oh, like,
show.
This inaugural episode is off to the fucking races.
Can I just say, though, Spencer just fucking bullseyed that DJ Muggs shit. He knew it right away.
Did he produce it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, this is obviously a good idea.
All right,
so I got it. All right, so
you got the real one now?
I got the real
one. 1982, number 24.
Okay.
I think I knew all the words to Jump Around.
All right, go on. So, this, the actual song we're going to be.
Is not nearly as good. Oh no.
Is Let It Whip.
Oh, by Daz Band.
Daz Band.
I know the song.
That sounds like right up my alley.
I fucking love this song.
The title and band name absolutely ring a bell to me, but
Whip It Baby. Whip It Right.
Oh, okay.
Whip It Baby.
Yeah, you got it.
Whip It All Night. Let it whip.
I mean, I okay, so I can say without a doubt.
I don't need to be here.
I love this podcast so much.
This is a very good.
I'm fucking ready to party.
This is a very good show. I will say, so my preamble, because I have to have one contractually, is that the...
Can I be on your podcast all the time? I'm so happy
The song...
Whip It Baby.
This song, the Daz Band song, all I know is that in the last few years of my life living in Oakland, I've listened to a bunch of 98.1 Kiss FM, which is a station that is no longer existent, while I drive around in the East Bay. And it was a beautiful radio station that played a lot of music that you only really hear in the year 20-something. You only really would have heard in the Bay Area on the radio, that so far that I can tell, because my wife does a lot of traveling and she'll turn on the radio and she'll be like, it's like country music and rock music.
Yeah.
And sometimes rap music. But like, you know, in the Bay Area, there's this like nostalgia for the 70s and 80s R&B, soul, boogie, disco, funk, like all that stuff. And and there was a huge scene for it, of course, in the East Bay and the Bay Area and the San Francisco.
Tower of Power came out of that scene.
Oh yeah, they were out of Oakland.
Yeah.
Larry Graham was from Oakland. Like, there's got Sheila E. I mean, there's like, it doesn't even stop. Like, that's just barely scratching the surface. But there's a ton of, like, there's a, again, to overuse the theme word, a nostalgia for that kind of music in the East Bay. And I feel like, because of that, I've fallen head over heels for a lot of it.
I love it.
I wouldn't normally have before. Like, I have a new nostalgia, like, as if I was there kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like over the years, I always thought like the song Get Down On It by Kool and the Gang was like a really obnoxious song because it would just pop up and I'd be like, ugh. And in the last like couple of years, I've been like, that song is a stone fucking masterpiece. Like that song is just like perfect. It's a perfect, brilliant song. I love every single thing about it. Wow. And I've really turned the corner on like that era of music as just like, it's totally open ears for any kind of like, you know, and it's not like I love all the songs unconditionally by any means. Well, I do not like some of them, but like.
Well, what can I ask you a question just sort of about this era, this early 80s era of sort of funk, you know, vibe? Like what? It's post 70s.
Yeah.
So what's going on? And it's also the dawn of super early hip hop. Yes.
For sure.
Like, so what's going on? What is that? Do you know where this song fits into that?
I don't really exactly. I don't know where the Dazz Band are from or like what their deal is, but I do know that like, you know, it's just like a really funky song. It fits exactly into its era. It's like 1982 is like the perfect time for this song because it's post disco.
Yeah.
And during disco, there was also this sort of offshoot coming out. That's like a disco slash funk combo, like pop funk, called Boogie. That's like just this really like popular, catchy dance music that has all the muscle of funk music, but it's like this sheen to it.
There's like two tracks on Off the Wall that do that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Like that's,
so
that,
that's
like,
your transition album, I think, in those areas.
Totally.
It has a little bit of hints of the funk, but also it's purely a disco album coming out of the 70s.
Yeah, it's got Burn This Disco Out, and it's got, you know, Off the Wall, which is like, you know, disco stuff, but like it's definitely getting funkier. Like Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Has disco elements, but it's a funk song.
Yeah, you can feel both eras in that album.
Working Day and Night. Oh,
that's my favorite track.
Such an insane funk tune. So like, yeah. So there's definitely this thing coming out in the early 80s. And I should say right now, Prince is my favorite musical artist. There is none other. And so, you know, I'm sure that's part of it. Like, you know, over the last several years, I fell in love with his stuff. And so like that was kind of my gateway into adjacent stuff. Because when I would see Prince live, his band would play some of this music. Like he would play Get Down, or he would not Get Down On It, but he would play Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, actually.
Yeah.
And he would play that funky music, White Boy, and Love Roller Coaster by the Ohio Players and stuff.
Wow.
Like in medleys during his show, even though, you know, he would be on the stage and be like, I got too many hits. And he would play like 35 of his own songs. He would also throw these other ones in there because he's just like, this is like kind of what was going on. Like,
wow.
And his first couple records are sort of in that vein, too. So yeah, this is a wheelhouse for me.
Okay.
But this is just a song that I'm not that familiar with.
That's amazing.
Well, it's funny that you say that because you brought Wild Cherry, right? Play that funky music.
Yeah.
But Wild Cherry and I would say Cameo are huge influences on this song. Like, this is a song that comes out of specifically, I'd say, that subgenre of this movement, which is Cameo, Wild Cherry.
I'm thinking Rick James too before
we
listen to it.
No, that's right. I mean, he specifically, you'll hear the vocal inflections of Cameo on this song.
Yeah.
A lot of people confuse that song with Cameo. Mm-hmm. But I would say that comes out of that same idea of Rick James. He's in there, Wild Cherry to a certain extent. But like, it's those fat, like funky sort of rhythmic movements.
Yeah.
But also with the weird vocal inflections. People don't know what the fuck they're doing
singing-wise
in this time.
Oh, for
sure. A lot of like, wow, you know, that kind of shit happening.
There was so much insanity with vocal inflection.
But only
in
for
funk
like
music.
3 years. Like, you segue out of it pretty quickly. Like, there's like a 3 or 4 year period where Cameo's hitting.
Oh my
god. And that's
god,
like the thing, right? Everyone's doing weird shit with their voices and stuff like that.
I agree with you. That is correct. But, you know, I can't remember right now what the voice sounds like in this song. So I think it's time to probably listen to it.
It's just like that.
Beat here and listen to the song and come right back.
Listen to Let It Whip by Dazz Band.
Fuck yeah, dude.
A band from Cleveland, Ohio, who are on the Motown label.
Is that Larry Blackman? Is that the guy from Cameo? Is that him
singing
the hook?
No.
It's not him.
It's not him, but
oh,
that's
God.
Totally... It's sneaking up on us. The eerie synth intro is sneaking up on us.
So can I ask I feel like on this episode, let me be sort of the less educated person and ask, how much of that sound is synth sound versus...
Not very much of it.
Not much of it?
No. There's a consistent drum machine pattern that a live drummer is playing on. Mm-hmm. And then there are some keyboards that just do synth noises that sort of take the place of horns. Like, it would be kind of a horn thing, but it's instead a synthesizer.
But that main sort of deep sort of bass sound is a bass?
It probably... You know what? Actually, that's a good point.
I think
because there's a synthesizer bass and a real bass.
That's I'm wondering.
Yeah, there's both.
Okay.
Both. So I think it's about split down, like, you know, two out of three sounds you hear maybe are synth sounds. Yeah, I mean, there's guitar. Or maybe half and half. Like, there's guitar which skews it a bit.
And I mean,
human voices.
Cool. And when I ask that, when did that take... That comes out of disco, I guess. And when does it...
Well,
I mean,
synthesizer music is just taking over all genres by 1982.
Okay.
So, like, you know, by that point, like... Like I mentioned, the synthesizer is sort of taking the place of the horn section in that song. But it's easier to use synthesizers, and it's also way more in vogue to use them.
Right.
And also that bass sound on a synthesizer is just funk. It's just pure funk. So that's like, you know, they just decide to use that tool and also have a live bassist who
just
sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Who's just like playing incredible licks. But I gotta say, that song is flawless. It's a
fucking
total
rules.
Masterpiece to me. I you know, when you named the song, and then you did the part, the part, I was like, oh yeah, that song. And I didn't get that excited, even though I waxed for a while about era of music and how much I now love it. I still didn't get that excited because I was just kind of thinking about, like, there are some songs from that era where I hear them and I think, like, that's all you got? Like, that's the thing you decided to do is, like, like, that's like you came up with that and then that was the song you did. And like I get that as a dance song, like that's 100% dance music, makes sense in that context to me, but it doesn't speak to me as a music fan, as a listener, and as a, you know, whatever. So I think that this song exceeds all my expectations and expands upon them when you just listen closely or even casually to it, because I just didn't quite remember what it sounded like.
Well, and you were talking a lot about Cameo. Is that... Because my radio ears thinks Cameo is cheese-tastic. Like,
this is all cheese-tastic, but it's played by fucking
rad
musicians.
But is Cameo good? Like,
are good. Okay. Cameo have a couple eras, too. Like, they have...
They're better than
a funk band era.
Up, basically?
They have a funk band era, and then they have Word Up. Those are the eras I know about from Cameo.
Right.
I think Word Up is pretty fun. I think Candy is better. I like that song.
Candy is much better.
Right.
But also think about the musicians playing on those albums. Like, it's not just like they're like, this song's very simple, but the licks and the pocket they get into makes it work.
I agree. This song has an amazing mood, and the Word Up mood to me is like dumb.
That's the thing is that I agree that Word Up is not that exciting, and like it's more surface level, catchy, like trying to get you with the attitude and like whatever. But it has a groove, of course. But I think this song, it's in that area, the boogie era, where the pocket is so deep, and the what the musicians are doing is so thorough and well thought through, and you know, like it's like what funk musicians study, kind of. It's like, you know, you want to be playing in the spaces of the song without showboating at all. So like you're doing everything
about.
You can to fill up the song, but you're not stealing focus from any one individual element. And it's this, like, what I wouldn't have guessed re-listening to this with focus of any kind is that it's like a mellifluously beautiful song.
Oh, it's
incredible. It's like, it's so lovely to the ears. Like so many of the songs from the era are, like I was just talking about Kool and the Gang's Get Down On It, how I used to think that was an annoying song because I could only think of the part that goes, get down on it, you know. But now I listen to that song and I'm like, there's so many beautiful things in that song. And the band, it's a band playing lovely music.
That, you know why that's a great comparison to this song? Is that they know when not to play.
Exactly.
Which is this song. Like, that song is mostly hits. Bop. Bop, get down on it. Bop, and there's vocal hits and there's horn hits and it's it's space. There's space in it, which
and
is
that
what
beautiful
funk
like what
is.
You want to do.
Yeah, I feel like funk is about space more than notes, and this is the era when that was starting to set in. Like Tower Power overplays, and they get kind of too crazy, whatever. There, I had a bunch of. For me, it was about dance, Kalen. So this song is far superior to Word Up for me, but I liked Word Up fine. Like the difference is, I had maybe 5 cassette tapes of songs recorded off the radio that were like this.
Yeah,
this song was for sure on it. Word Up was definitely not on it.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess, and I mean, to be really reductive about it, what I feel there's a mood with this song, but it makes me want to go be cool somewhere. And yeah. Word Up makes me like not want to be there. Like that's yeah, that, yeah, I get. Yeah, I'm yeah. like, who yeah. is here listening to this song?
Yeah,
weird.
But that yeah. song you have to kind of get bogged down in the vocals. And this song has yeah. very few vocals, so it's easy. But if you're not like bobbing your head to this song,
but I would
dead.
Say the right. vocals that are in this song, actually the vocals are pretty constant. It's just that they don't obtrusive. Pop out at you. They're, yeah, yeah. they're another instrument. They're very beautiful yeah. and sinuous.
And there's for unlike this time, there's some like nice like singing in it.
There's beautiful singing. Yeah. There's lovely singing.
Well, that bridge sequence, which Spencer you noted, comes back again.
Yeah.
to actually close out the song, basically. Yeah. It sort of deviates entirely away from the rest of the mood of the rest of the song without feeling out of continuity with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's beautiful when it does that.
Becomes a soul song for a second. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah. Michael Jackson didn't originate this, but that's the trick he uses a lot, which is to completely. Go into that and then slams you back into the funk and you're double into it.
I should also say that my initial reaction to the song within the first minute was Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yep.
This is like an Earth, Wind, and Fire style pop song mm-hmm, where it's about the groove and the band and the sinuous voices and stuff, but it's where it goes as a pop song as well, because they were masters at that. They were absolute masters at that.
So yeah. This is interesting, Kalen. Like I think that in terms of nostalgia, you say it like conjures up a tone to you or an image, yeah?
Yeah.
I think it does too, and I wonder if that's part of the I would you guys seem to or Kalen, I think you disagree with this, but I would say this song has lasted. Like I still listen to this song.
I had never heard this song in my entire life.
Really?
Yes.
I still listen to this song. I put it on and it still makes me happy. I know it. Like
I'm sure I've heard it. In fact, I'm not only sure I've heard it, I can just say I've heard it. But yeah. I don't know exactly when I've heard it, and I just sort of was aware of it ambiently, maybe more than anything else. Right. And I think part of it may have been that radio station I listened to in the East Bay, 98.1 Kiss FM, that is sadly departed, yeah. where they would play songs in this era. And again, not to repeat myself, but I'm going to, it absolutely recreates something for me
yeah.
nostalgically that I wasn't yeah. there for.
Yes.
It's like, yes. And something that I should say. So if nostalgia is like a bringing of the past into the present in some way, then I think that there are cultures now and people who find this music to be very current and appropriate, and it's kind of coming back in with specifically Bruno Mars. I think he's like the guy who's doing it now. He's like with his latest thing.
I just posted a video of him today on Facebook because I precisely the reason you just said. It's yeah. the only thing I've seen in the last 10 years that reminds me of 1980 to 1984.
And he's doing it so calculatedly and deliberately and like in a way that I don't love it, but I can totally understand somebody getting into it because it's a perfect recreation of this stuff. He's like, in fact, so perfect that he got sued by a couple different people for Uptown Funk, yeah, which is
Mark Ronson's fault, though.
Fair enough. Yeah. But yeah.
Let me ask you this, as perhaps our last topic of the moment or of this particular song is lyrical content is just one idea. Come hang out, come dance, come party, come be my girl for a night.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah.
Come
be my girlfriend.
Well, that's.
Night.
I mean, I'm
I
looking,
totally agree.
I was, like,
just
looking
hysterical,
at the
like.
Well, and what I love is the refrain, which comes during the most soulful part, which is "I won't waste your time,"
yeah.
which is
There's
like
no
this,
time for losing.
It's really I don't know why the way that he sings it and the way that it sticks out in this track is like that seems to be the most emphatic plea. It's
yeah.
like I can say all these pretty words and I can appeal to you, but here's the truth.
Not gonna waste
I won't
time.
Waste your time.
Yeah.
And that I thought that was like kind of genius.
It's brilliant. Yeah. But good. It's like the casual brilliance that's like you're making a pop song kind of
right.
casual brilliance where you're like the message of this song, there are so many ways to make a message out of a song. And there are so many ways to fill a melody with words also that right. don't necessarily have to do with message. And in so many cases, a pop song falls in that liminal area of like, where, what is, like, it's not really about, or it doesn't matter what it's about exactly.
Right.
But when you sort of pay attention to the song, the lyrics, you can either be like, wow, I didn't know it was about that. Or you can just be like, yeah, of course it's about that. Yeah, right, it's exactly right, what it's about.
Yeah, totally.
And this is one of those songs yes. where it's like, yeah, of course. It's just some words that sound good about hanging out.
Yeah, yes.
And like, you know, and that's what the song feels like. And so it's like...
It feels exactly like
and they're, you know, it's a dance song. So like, mm-hmm. you know, that's completely it too.
You know what's interesting too about this, and just in terms of where it comes out of? So, you know, out of the James Brown era... when bass was really fronted. And you talked about the bass line, which I think is really smart. But I would say starting in 81 going on, people start to play the same fucking wicked bass licks, but they don't put them up in the mix. Mm. They're subtle, right? Like they don't front them as much, it feels like.
I'm interested in what I mean, I'm not sure if I am have a lot of experience with that as a trend. But I do think that like... definitely bass playing and synth bass have like synth bass starts to just take over from that in a lot of pop contexts, like starting with when synthesizer became in vogue like it was at this time.
Well, and this song is funny that way because you're hearing that and I in my head I was like, okay, that's a synth sound, that's yeah. what that is. But then like sneaky Mr. Real Bass comes in and is like, whoa, like what's that crazy sound? Oh yeah, that's a bass.
Yeah, like, no, that's a real bass and he's playing the fuck out of it. He's yeah. playing so but, much but, and beautifully.
Well, that's why I was asking because yeah. I was yeah. like there's standard bass sound which you basically get used to
yeah.
until the real bass comes and you're like, what is that thing?
Yeah.
It's funny to me that would be what they lay down because yeah. that's more, I guess what you said was more in vogue.
Yeah. yeah. Well, they, you know, the,
well, that's not necessarily just 80s too. Sorry to interrupt you, but coming out of the funk movement, that's a big thing. You play the bass line on a Hammond organ, double it on the bass, and the bass player plays the licks and the Hammond organ left hand plays the line. That's like an old James Brown trick.
Oh, so sure.
That's something that comes out of the 70s also. But here, I think really tastefully done.
But yeah, the synthesizer bass is like a new world of tones for people who just like want the fattest tone they can get
right.
for their you know, a funk beat, and the bass playing is just a way to make it at like they just decided like they're like real bass, fake bass. You know, fake horns, real guitar, real drums, fake drums.
Yeah, right.
And they're just like, it's not like they're throwing in everything. It's just like they knew how, like, once they had laid down certain stuff down, they're like, we've got, there's just still a little more room.
Well, and it has, stuff. I mean, it seems like that's essentially what Daft Punk does, right? I mean, they take this idea of synth sound, especially on their loops, especially on the sounds that feel like they... carry the song across the whole thing,
yeah,
and then supplement it with actual instruments. So it's funny that it's just interesting that weird newer sound is the standard sound, and that old instruments become the supplement.
It's bizarre. It's a really interesting production in that way. I would say that, you know, the Daft Punk thing. Daft Punk are so often just sampling
well, right,
a song course. Like this. Like they're just like straight up sampling it. But they do add stuff on top too, at least
right.
until they started completely arranging only for instruments.
Right.
At which point they kind of lost me, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have a preference of synth, or is it just taste-based,
case-by-case,
I totally agree with you. The last thing I'll say about that is that I think that you're right, this is played to a click track, this is played to a synthesized drum beat, for sure, but there is a way in this area especially that they're still finding pockets and grooves and like breath in those things, which I've completely. Always found very impressive, because Daft Punk can't do that.
Not really, no. Yeah, right. They don't really do that.
So it is interesting to hear it breathe in a funk way.
Well, they're just funk musicians. Like, you know, a funk musician, you can't tell someone how to be one.
Yeah, you get in the pocket or you're not. Like, yeah. That's the thing about those songs. They're so hard to play.
Yeah.
Like, logistically,
what
does
that
to play.
Define that for me, the pocket, in terms of how it sounds in this song?
It's so difficult for me to do. It's just like... when you listen back to the song, which we might as well do at the end.
Yeah.
Now it's
I can kind of try.
It's just spacey. It's just like there's so much going on, but there's a space in between it all.
It's a
and all of it grooves. All of it has the rhythm within it. There's no choice that they make that isn't rhythmically locked in.
You know, the drum beat is this dun tat dun tat dun tat dun tat dun, right? So it's that third one. If you do it on the meter specifically, it doesn't swing. It's not in the pocket. But if there's a fucking millisecond swing on the back of it, there's a breath that makes it pocket. It makes it swing. So the meters were kings of this, right? We're just talking about them the other day. Right. They're kings of finding that just swing where it doesn't lock off beat. It's not slowing up or slowing down or speeding up. It's just that breath of that backbeat to get you in a thing. It's almost impossible to do unless you're in it. You just have to play it, right?
And yeah, that's how it being works. Behind the beat. Yeah, I mean, that's the, I feel like funk musicians talk about funk music and scholars talk about funk music in like what I consider to be almost contradictory terms. They say it's all about being behind the beat, and then they say it's about being on the one.
Yeah, exactly right.
And it's both of those things apply completely, and yet and yet like syncopation is also totally crucial, and yet being, you know, behind the beat and yet the one, and yet, you know, it's like, but all these things is so important. And the only reason that that makes sense is that it's all just rhythmic feel.
You know what's great?
You can't really explain rhythmic feel because moment by moment, it is what makes you move, and it's not.
It's intuitive. What you're thinking. There's a great example. So in the documentary, This Is It, the Michael Jackson last thing he put out when he's researching,
which I just watched 3 days
ago. Okay, great. So there's a moment here that I'm going to, that I think addresses this, and then we can wrap up whatever. That, do you remember, it's the Way You Make Me Feel, I think it is, but the keyboard player's playing dum, 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 dum.
Oh yeah.
And Michael Jackson's like, no, stop. You're not playing it right, man. The keyboard player's like, oh, and this is one of the top keyboard players in the world. And he plays it again. And Michael Jackson's like, stop. Much love. No, you know, no disrespect here, but you're just not playing it right. And he goes, how do you want me to play it? And he goes, play it like it's on the album. And the guy's like, I am. And then he plays it again and stops. And Michael Jackson stops, and he's like very frustrated. And he says, I'm probably paraphrasing, you've seen it more recently, but he goes, just play it like you're getting out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, got it. And then fucking nails it.
Yeah.
That's how he communicates to that guy. And that's the pocket. That's it. He got the feel by doing that, and you feel a subtle difference musically and rhythmically. If you charted it, same charts, looks exactly the same. A computer would read them the same.
Yep,
but they fucking feel different, and that's that funk pocket.
And know? Michael Jackson, of all people, one of the only probably singers in the world who can, like, more or less can be heard dancing while he's singing on all of his recordings. he is a complete. One of the great living modern masters of feeling rhythm. And so any musician is going to take instruction from someone about how to feel a song, it's Michael Jackson.
I just love that that's what he went with, because it's so intuitively right, and then the guy gets it instantly. Like, that, I just saw a magic thing happen. Like, that's a magic, you know? Anyway, this song rules.
That was great. Great song. Good new show you got here, Spencer.
Hey, Spencer, take it and run.
I'm not going to pick another song yet, though. I think it's better to pick it at the beginning.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You can't think about it then. Or if you run into it on the radio, you can't spoil yourself.
That's right.
Well, take us out, Spencer. What's your outro?
My outro is, that was fun. Maybe we should do it again.
Yeah,
I really enjoy talking about music, and I don't get to do it as often as I like, and this is like a weirdly serendipitous and a very generous, honestly, opportunity.
You are going to do this and take it to newer and greater heights.
To invite me to do some of that.
Get in the pocket, bro.
And, you know,
does your favorite suck family?
Yeah.
We have a
does
whole
your favorite blank
now.
Suck?
Does your favorite blank suck?
And I should say that I probably definitely misspoke about some stuff. Who knows what the hell? And probably will in every episode. But that's just how it is.
Do it.
You're
kind of what people expect from me.
I'm a musician. I play music. I'm a fan of music. I know some stuff. And we, for a second, thought that House of Pain's Jump Around came out in 1982.
I wonder how long that would have gone.
It's gonna be a good show.
All right.
Well, tune in next time for Does Your Favorite Song Suck?